Y'all, it is a good day to be church, am I right? I am grateful and honored for this invitation. It is a beautiful space and place, and again, I am honored to be here. I am a little hopeful that maybe Daniel is just a tad bit nervous asking his older sister to preach on his behalf. I'm 11 years older, so in those 11 years, I may or may not have a lot of stories that, depending on if the price is right, I could tell some of y'all. But again, it is a good day to be church. I bring you greetings from your sister church in Tucson, Arizona, at Saguaro Christian Church. I serve there as one of the pastors. Heart of the Rockies and the Central Mountain region, you are getting a gem. Daniel is solid. He has a good heart and a strong work ethic. He sees both sides of all situations. He has a heart for justice, and he loves to create opportunities for people of opposite sides to come together to talk. He loves the Avett brothers and Wendell Berry. He is smart and he's articulate. He's a team player and tries to be the best team player possible. On the Enneagram, he's a 2, and he is an ENFJ on the Myers-Briggs. He likes long hikes in the mountain and truly has a pastor's heart. No, this isn't his dating profile, because I think he still has a girlfriend. This is just an affirming statement from a very proud big sister. I feel like I just missed something. Oh, yes, of course. It matches the stole, right?
It got hot in here.
But friends, today is more than just about Daniel. It's more than about Heart of the Rockies. It's more than this installation that brings us all here, because y'all, this is about you and about me. This is about our table. Oscar Romero once said that the church's duty in the world is to lend Christ its voice so that Jesus can speak, its feet so that he can walk in the world today, its hands to work in the building the kingdom of today's world, and all members to fill up what is lacking in his suffering. This work of the table, it's a change from the inside out. This work of the table is a transformation with how we view the world. This work of the table is providing radical hospitality. This work of the table, this is what we're all called to be about, this revolutionary way of looking at others the way God intended us to be, looking at each other as we see the image of God in everyone we meet. This work of the table is hard, but we all know that, right? Because we are people of the table. The communion table of the disciples is central to all we do. And yet I will say that relationships are central to any work of the church, but especially when it could be divisive. A pastor's role is to challenge and nurture and to walk alongside its community. And so when we gather around the table, we begin to intimately love and know one another. We get to learn from one another because we are challenged to do this work together. For you see, God's call to work of the justice-centered piece of how we live our lives is not done recklessly, but it's communal. Because I believe that when we think about the Gospels and the table and how all of that meshes together, it's kingdom work. It's how Christ sets the table for us all. And that takes imagination, holy imagination, to see what is possible. It takes innovation as we try something new. And with hard work, the Holy Spirit will do what she does as we get one step closer to God's shalom. The Jesus of Luke's gospel has a strong interest in eating. There are more references to eating and banquets in the gospel of Luke than in any other gospel. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I like that gospel so much, and I believe Daniel likes it as well. I share affinity with all things food, and I feel that Jesus would have loved pizza and chocolate chip cookies and fried chicken and casseroles just as much as the next church-going person at a potluck. So here we find Jesus at the table with a large group of people, and as is his habit, he is more concerned with the people at that meal than he is with what is actually being served. Because he was explaining once again how the roles of life gets flipped, turned upside down, because this teaching of Jesus, it's radical. Jesus says you're inviting the wrong people by including only your friends and only your family and only those who are like-minded, or possibly maybe the ones that can advance your status. You're no better than them. You're trying to make yourself look good while you ignore those who should be at this table. The table is a place of grace. It's around this table where we see each other in our common humanity, where our differences begin to fade. And I believe that's why Jesus tells stories around banquets and wedding feasts and dinner parties. They all have their own set of inner working orders and rules. I wonder what it would look like if those who weren't at the table decided to just show up. You see, Luke's focus always seems to be with turning expectations upside down. The status quo gets flipped, and the gospel writer makes it clear who's the boss. And it's not you, and it's not me, but it's God. He tells us all it's time to throw away the old guest list of relatives and friends of the same social class and replace it with the list of those who would not be the natural choice of people. This will change our church. This will change our community. This will change our spirit. This work of the table. You see, Jesus came to level the playing field between the haves and the have-nots, between the wealthy and the poor, between the healthy and the sick, between the conservatives and the liberals, between group A and group B. Jesus wants us to understand the all-too-human drive to see difference isn't what it's all about. Treating others the way you want to be treated isn't what it's all about. Even seeing each other as equal isn't what it's all about, because it's more than that. It's seeing each other through the lenses of love. This work of the table. A group of psychologists conducted an experiment with 150 people on a weekend retreat. They told everyone to move into 8 breakout rooms with no more than 20 people in each group. Those were the only directions given. Everyone reacted with such great anxiety to the directions. People quickly moved into the rooms and elected an appointed leader and counted off to make sure they only had 20 people. And then they shut the doors of the breakout rooms. They closed anyone else out. They did this even though no one told them to elect a leader or to shut the door. Later that weekend, the psychologists helped the participants to articulate their experience, and they noticed how quickly it can happen, how quickly it can happen to have this hard mentality, dividing ourselves with outsiders and insiders, us and them, how quickly that happens. And yet I believe that we all feel God is best seen in community. God is made visible through the many shades and hues of people with differing opinions and ideals. When we come around this table, we fall in love. We fall in love with the place that we live in. We fall in love with the people that we serve with. We fall in love with those who you can't help but see Christ a part of them. So allow your heart to break. For when you do, you will feel the rhythm of people in your community. You will feel the heartbeat of those that you serve alongside with. You will see the places of injustice. You will hear the cries of the hurting. You will experience heartache as you work towards God's holy shalom together. Martin Luther King once said, "Our goal is to create a beloved community, and this will require a qualitative change in our souls, as well as a quantitative change in our lives." Hospitality is not drudgery. This work shouldn't drain us. This work should energize us. Building the beloved community is the best way to think about this dreary world that we sometimes get caught in. The news cycles, the livelihood, the ways in which we live and breathe and have our being sometimes feel so heavy. And yet we know the way that we come together and that we make ourselves a little bit lighter is to practice hospitality, is to break down those barriers that draw us so far away from God and just eat. In the kingdom of God, we see this inversion of hospitality, in which those on the margins are placed right directly in the center, right so everyone can see them. Because he reminds us that our community is only as strong as the weakest members. For those fringes, they become friends around the table. No strings attached. There is a Yale theologian who says there's this idea of the drama of embrace. This embrace is the will to give ourselves to the other and welcome them, to readjust our identities to make space for them prior to any judgment or preconceived notion we may have them, simply because they are a human. They will embrace any holy drama that is possible because hospitality is creating space. It's not just to change people, but it's to love them. Period. The end. And I don't mean some distant token, oh, let's just keep them at an arm's length kind of love. I mean in this extravagant, open-hearted, unapologetic, lavish, radical, amazing, agape kind of love. For when we see each other through these lenses, our food tastes different. However, we can't begin this work if we're hangry all the time. If we live in this hungry and angry kind of being, we can't do this. So we have to eat together. We don't get to opt out of living our lives because we may or may not be appreciated. We're not allowed to neglect the oppressed because we may have reservations about them. We can't deny love because it might be misunderstood. We can't hold social relief back because we are convinced it may be mismanaged. We can't do that, but what we can do is love, and that means that we will be uncomfortable, we'll be uneasy, We'll be unsure. We'll be awkward. We'll trip over our own 2 feet, and our hands will get all kinds of sweaty because this work of the table. Now, I don't typically have much luck in airplanes. Y'all, this work of the table, you see, I'm typically the type of person who takes an early morning flight because I like to sleep, or a late evening flight so I can sleep. Yet I'm extremely extroverted and I like to make friends wherever I go, except on airplanes. On airplanes, I like to sleep. Well, for this time, for whatever reason, I wasn't quite quick enough with my headphones, and before I knew it, the gentleman next to me said, "Hello." Well, I'm not a rude person, so I said hello back. And before long, we were chatting, and about 30 minutes into a 4-hour flight, he asks, "So, what is it that you do?" And if I'm honest, I toyed with the idea of saying something other than what I really do, but I don't lie, and I'm not rude. So I answered, "I'm a minister." "Oh." And at that point, I knew 4 hours was going to be a long time. We continued to talk, but the tone changed, and it wasn't a casual conversation any longer. For you see, it turned a bit more confrontational. He began asking me about my church and the denomination that I served, and before long, he was telling me in a rather matter-of-fact tone that women shouldn't be ministers. And he told me that he thought I was leading people away from Jesus instead of toward them because of my gender. He accused me of being a false prophet and said that he would pray for the souls that I would lead astray. I wish I was making this up, but this work of the table, y'all. So I politely told him that I thought he was wrong, but he got rather loud and just couldn't fathom it. I told him I believed that God loved everyone, and he proceeded to tell me that God loved men more than women, that my role was in the kitchen, and that I had it all wrong, and that I should do something about it. God did not call girls to ministry, his words, not mine. I wish I could say my feelings weren't hurt, and I wish I could say that I wasn't on the verge of tears, and I wish I could say that it didn't bother me, but I can't, y'all, because it did. Because I wanted nothing more than to get off of that plane. The time came for us to have our snack, that little morsel that holds you over between meals. I was hopeful that this was my out, my time to put my headphones on and go back to sleep. There was a part of me that when that polite flight attendant came by and said, "What would you like to drink?" I toyed with a few things, but I got my typical Diet Coke. And we had our drink and our snacks. And then that's when something important happened, something almost, one might say, holy. I wasn't quite sure, but for some reason I just couldn't finish my cookie. And then I got that awkward feeling inside of my stomach. You know, that moment when you know that something important's going to happen, and so you get really nervous about it. So I asked him if he wanted the other half of my cookie, and he said yes, and I broke it in half, and we took it, and we ate it together, and then we finished our drink together, and we continued our conversation. God took our lives and blessed our time together by breaking them open so that we might share with each other. A table was set. The playing field was leveled as the conversation shifted. Our common humanity was realized. When we take the time to be with each other, we realize that God has poured God's self into each of us. God didn't do this so we could rest knowing that God is in our hearts and minds and sing kumbaya around the campfire, but rather so that we would be driven to uneasiness. You know that feeling, that awkwardness, when you know something important is happening, but it's still hard. You see, both of us knew what happened in that moment. Both of us knew the tone of the conversation, and yet we continued. We don't learn to love each other well in the easy moments. Anyone is good company at a dinner party. But love is born when we misunderstand one another and make it right. When we cry in the kitchen, when we show up uninvited with pizza and chocolate chip cookies, when we have a half of a cookie and a Diet Coke as an effort to say, I see you, to say, I love you, to say, I know you. We come to this table because our hunger brings us here. We come with a need, with a fragility, with an admission of our humanity. This table, this is where the doing stops, the trying stops. The masks are removed and we allow ourselves to be nourished. You have called Daniel to be a pastor and a teacher with you, to serve alongside of Melissa, and to partner with each of you in the endeavors of Christ's work in this world. This work of the table asks y'all to show up when it's not convenient, when you are unsure about this idea that he has, when you wish that you could be any other place. Because through this table, this is where all are valued and loved and cared for through Christ. Because when we love, it becomes what we do. When we create opportunities across the aisle, it's who we are. And then we eat, literally and figuratively together, with holy imagination and holy innovation. Since Daniel loves Wendell Berry so much, I will end with this Wendell Berry quote. So friends, every day do something that won't compute. Give your approval to all you cannot understand. Ask the questions that have no answers. Put your faith in 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every thousands of years. Laugh, be joyful though you have considered all the facts. Practice resurrection. Church, this is a good day. This is an exciting day. This is the Lord has made day. We will eat and we will celebrate kind of day. And we will all rejoice. But I urge you, friends, don't forget your table manners. Amen.